this is Brent Stahlberg, and you are listening to the Run to the Top podcast.
Hi there, my running friend. This is Coach Claire Bartholik, the Planted Runner, and this is the Run to the Top podcast, one of the first and only running podcasts dedicated to making you a better runner with each and every episode. We are created and produced by the expert team of running coaches at runnersconnect.net, where you can find the best running information on the internet, as well as running coaching plans to fit every runner and every budget. When you think about your running, what is the very best image you can imagine? Is it being able to run a certain goal or a certain time? Or do you imagine something less measurable, like having a rock solid confidence in your fitness, knowing that challenges will come and you will be able to calmly overcome them? Or maybe it's weathering the ups and downs that inevitably will happen with the goal of being a runner for life. Most likely, it's a combination of all three. In any of these scenarios, it's not just about building up your physical fitness. To meet these goals, you need to build a strong, resilient mind as well. But building mental strength feels far more subjective than physical strength. After all, you can't count mental strength reps like you can count laps around a track. But with practice and maybe with a little guidance, you can build a strong mental and emotional foundation that can not only support all of your physical running goals, but with practice and a little guidance, you can build a strong mental and emotional foundation that can not only support all of your physical running goals, but make the rest of your life better as well. A foundation of calm confidence can help you more effectively deal with the challenges that come up with grace instead of self-doubt. Another word for this foundation is called groundedness, and today I'm delighted to share my conversation with the author that wrote an entire book on it, Brad Stahlberg. Brad researches, writes, and coaches on health, well-being, and sustainable performance. He is the best-selling author of the new book, The Practice of Groundedness, as well as Peak Performance. His work has been featured in Outside Magazine, The New York Times, New Yorker, Atlantic, Wall Street Journal, Los Angeles Times, Time Magazine, Forbes, and more. You might know him from his weekly newsletter with Coach Steve Magnus called The Growth Equation, which I highly recommend for all runners. We talk about what Brad has found are the six key pillars to groundedness and how they can improve performance. Some of them you might find familiar, others perhaps not, but they do share something in common. Just like running, the concepts are simple, but not always easy. If you find at the end of the show you'd like to learn more about groundedness and how to practice it, I'll mention some special offers just for Run to the Top listeners, which you can also find in our show notes at runnersconnect.net/484. I loved this conversation with Brad, and fun fact, he lives in Asheville, North Carolina, just like I do. We met through a friend of a friend, and I hope this is the first of many conversations that I have with him. Before we get into our conversation, if you're recovering from a race, then you want to make sure you're maximizing your nutrition to help you recover faster. And one of the best ways to do this is with Heal from Amino Company. Later on in the episode, I'll tell you more about Heal and how it can help with your race recovery, or you can check out the research at aminoco.com/RTTT. And now here's my conversation with Brad Stahlberg. Welcome to the Run to the Top, Brad.
Hey, Claire, it's really good to be here.
So it's often said that success in running, or really any athletics, is as much mental as it is physical. But for some reason, it seems like the mental piece is a lot harder to develop. Why would you say that is, or do you agree with that, first of all?
Well, I don't necessarily know if it is harder to develop versus just less developed. And I think that perhaps the reason for why is because it's harder, but it's also because it's not as measurable. So when you're training your body, you have all of these feedback units that are very concrete. So your heart rate, your VO2 max, your breath rate, your pace, your volume, the number of miles you've run. And you have those indicators of whether you're making progress or not that are right in your face, they're immediate, and you can quickly adjust. And when you try to improve the mental side of things, you don't have those kinds of concrete metrics. So I think that that in itself makes it harder, but I'm not sure if getting mentally stronger is actually harder than getting physically stronger itself. It's just that when you don't have those units of feedback, then it becomes challenging.
Okay, that definitely makes sense, especially with runners. You know, most runners, the stereotypical runner is completely data-driven, loves the data, loves the metrics. That's part of why we like running, is because you do the work and you see the results. But it's a lot harder, as you said, to see the results of what's going on in your head, would you say?
Yeah, you have to almost feel your way into them or observe the results that are going on in your head. I mean, I'm sure that there are apps out there that help you measure your breathing and try to follow a dot on a screen and control it with your breath. Those can be helpful in certain circumstances for certain people, but I think ultimately the mental game is a lot of letting go of all that stuff anyways.
Yeah. Well, let's get into it. So your new book is called The Practice of Groundedness, which I read in a day. Loved it, first of all. And you talk about 6 principles of groundedness. And I want to get into them all and specifically relate them to running, even though they relate to a lot of things in our lives, but it's a running show, so we want to talk about running. But first of all, what is groundedness and why is it important?
Yeah, so I'm going to talk about groundedness in 2 different ways, both of which will relate to a mountain. So the first way is if you see a big, beautiful mountain, most people immediately glance up. They look to the mountain's peak and they admire the peak. And perhaps if it's a really steep and prominent mountain, they'll also look at its slope, maybe the last few pitches on the way to the peak. Very rarely do people look at a big, beautiful mountain and focus on its base. But it is the base, it's the foundation of the mountain that sustains the slope and the peak. And it's the base that is what holds the mountain solid, sturdy to the ground throughout all kinds of weather and over time. And without a strong base, a mountain degrades very easily. That's the first little metaphor. The second one involving a mountain is climbing. So there can be 2 climbers, and they both really want to get to the top of the mountain. The first climber is constantly obsessing about getting to the peak. They're wondering what it's going to feel like when they're at the peak, the selfies they're going to take, the posts on social media they're going to make, what their friends are going to think of them, the stories that they're going to tell over drinks about being at the peak. The second climber wants to get to the peak equally as bad, but they're really present for where they are. They're focused on taking consistent small steps. They're being patient. They're even enjoying the view from the side of the mountain as they climb towards the peak. Now, both of those climbers are going to get to the same place. But I argue in The Practice of Groundedness, the texture of those climbs are completely different. The one that is constantly obsessing about getting there probably won't climb as long because they're so much more susceptible to burning out. So groundedness is both about developing a really solid, strong foundation out of which all striving and goal setting and goal pursuing comes. It's what holds you to the ground. And it's also about what provides gravity, what keeps you grounded as you strive for big goals. Because otherwise, it's so easy to get caught up in this compulsive need to get there that very quickly becomes stress, anxiety, and exhaustion. And for runners, far too often, this thing that is for many people a hobby becomes like tiresome because there's so much pressure to achieve these goals and they're so focused on what's out in front of you versus being where you are.
Yeah. I mean, that definitely makes me think of the marathon, you know, instead of climbing the mountain, running a marathon, 26.2 miles or 42 kilometers. If you think about that all in one chunk, that is overwhelming. I don't care who you are or how many times you've run a marathon. That is a big thing for your brain to grasp. But if you think, okay, I'm just going to run to that telephone pole or I'm just going to stay in this 1 mile, it's easier to focus. It's easier to, you know, eat the elephant one bite at a time. So is that the kind of thing that you're talking about?
Yeah, I think so. To both stay in that 1 mile and to do what you can to accept that there are going to be highs and lows over the course of the 26 miles. And when the lows come, you're present for them. You accept that they're happening. You work through them. And when the highs come, you show restraint. So you don't want to go out at 5:40 pace because you feel good in the first mile if you're actually a 7:30 pace runner. And if at mile 17, things start to go to crap, you don't want to be impatient and, you know, have your mind spiral to a bad place. You want to be there with what's happening and try to work your way out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get into the six concepts, because yeah. I think going through them one by one can not only help explain what you're talking about a little bit more, but we can also learn how to practice this. You know, just like we practice running with certain workouts and certain runs, or maybe we practice, you know, eating better, you know, fueling our workouts, you know, our fueling plan. I really believe that in order to be the best runner that you possibly can be, you need to have mental workouts just like you have physical workouts. And you laid out a lot of things that I think runners can learn from. So the first one is accept where you are to get where you want to go. So let's talk about this, because some people don't like this one. You know, accepting where they are kind of feels like giving up.
Yeah, so there's a lot of confusion with the word acceptance. I think you're spot on. People hear acceptance and they think passive resignation or phoning it in or it's okay to be mediocre. That is not at all what acceptance means. Acceptance simply means seeing clearly what is happening in front of you right now and then taking as wise of an action as you can to deal with it. So acceptance asks you not to have an overly optimistic view of your situation, not to delude yourself, not to engage in magical thinking, not to buy stuff and tweet when things aren't going your way to numb it, but to really see what is happening fully, whether you like it or not, because it's only when you fully see what's happening that you can do something that is actually productive about it. I think such a problem endemic to our culture, and this is in running and far beyond, is we rarely work on the actual thing that needs to be worked on. So we tend to work on like the proximate areas, but not the thing itself. So, you know, it's the example of only wanting to do certain like workouts because you love them, but neglecting all the stuff that's going to keep you injury free. And you keep getting injured and you refuse to accept that the reason you're getting injured is because you're neglecting the stuff that's going to keep you injury free. That's just one running metaphor. To use a non-running analogy or non-running story, I should say, but with a little running bend, is COVID. So this summer, y'all are in Asheville, so we can y'all each other.
Yes, we can.
COVID was effectively zero. It was great. We were back to life as usual. I've got a son that's too young to be vaccinated. We were marginally, if worried at all, because cases were like one per 100,000. And then the Delta variant came. And it was as if we were at mile 25 of a marathon and we could see the finish line and we were finally going to get through this grueling race. And someone picked us up and moved us back to mile 13.
Yes.
The immediate response is to deny it, to repress it, to not want to accept it. And I think that I went through that. I think everyone went through that collectively. But the sooner we could actually accept with what was happening, the more easily we could groove in and then deal with what was in front of us. And this happens all the time in life and in running.
Yeah. Yeah. I think accepting, you know, like if you're in a race and, you know, your shoe gets untied or something like that, you have to either get upset that your shoe is untied or you say, oh, my shoe's untied. I'm going to stop. And then I'm going to tie it and move on. But I think the other side of this is that people, you know, if you've never run as fast as you are planning to run on that race day, you don't know what to accept. You don't know what's coming. And so a lot of people get overly optimistic. You know, you gave the example of somebody running out at five, whatever pace when they're really a 7:30 runner. You know, they are like, well, you know, even though I haven't trained for this, I'm going to have a great day. And they're overly optimistic. Like, do you see that side of it too?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that the overly optimistic part of it can come in, particularly if you're feeling really good in any given moment. It's easy to let that feeling kind of take over, when in fact, like there, the acceptance is probably, hey, there's a long race ahead of me. I think all the research shows that the best way to do this is to either straight split or negative split, but very rarely does someone positive split a PR. So it's accepting that fact and then slowing the heck down for a little bit and giving yourself some time and space to groove in. Your shoe example, I think, is a good one too, because what you said is your shoe comes undone and you can either get angry about it or tie it. And the person that gets angry about it, they're going to end up tying it eventually anyways. So what I'm trying to do is help people save the step of getting angry about it, because all it does is waste time and energy.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Okay. So let's move on to the next one. So be present so you can own your attention and energy.
Wait, can I backtrack to acceptance for just one sec?
Yeah, sure.
I can't believe I forgot to use this. So this is something that it's one of my favorite practices in the book because it's so effective. And it's funny, whenever I'm talking to like radio or people about this that aren't runners, I use a running analogy. So like,
of course, bring it on. Bring it on.
Runners. So when we're in situations that we care deeply about and we're really invested in, it's pretty hard to think clearly about what's going on. There's a lot of emotions that get involved. So researchers call this self-distancing. You want to create some space between yourself and the experience that you're going through. And meditation is a great way to do this. It takes a lot of practice. Something that doesn't take any practice that you can start doing tomorrow that is equally effective is what I like to call giving advice to a friend. So pretend that a friend is in the exact same situation that you're in. What advice would you give to that friend? And then do that. So I promised you the running story. You're limping out the door. You've got a high hamstring strain. Every forward step down the stairs hurts. But you're getting this workout in because you've already rested for 2 days. And it's scheduled to be a tempo run. And you've got a race in 8 weeks. And you just got to show up and do this workout. Now imagine that your friend is limping down their stairs, clutching their hamstring, really anxious about the workout because their leg hurts so much, and they've got a race in 8 weeks. What advice would you give to that friend?
Don't run.
Right. So then you yourself have to do that. And I've coached like Olympic caliber athletes using this, and it is the hardest thing for them to do. And I'm convinced I've saved athletes seasons by having them give advice to a friend and then act on this advice.
I love that one. I do a little twist on that with some of my athletes. So distance self-talk. So when you're getting to a hard part in a run or a workout or something like that, talk to yourself in third person. So yeah. Claire, get up the hill. Claire, you can do this. Claire, move forward. Claire, keep running or whatever. And it is so much different than if you say, I've got to move. I've got to get up the hill. If you switching to third person instead of first person, it sounds so ridiculous. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah. And it is very much a part of what all the latest behavioral science research shows. But it's also like age old ancient wisdom that says that we have this awareness or this deeper self and then the self that's actually in the moment. And what you're doing there very brilliantly is you're tapping into that awareness or that deeper self that is going to be a lot wiser, a lot kinder, a lot more compassionate to help guide the self in the moment through whatever you're going through.
Absolutely. It really, really works. Okay. So we can move now to be present.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. Yeah. So tell us about that. Obviously, we want to be present, you know, when we're running, when we're with our family. We hear this all the time. This is like something, be present. It's easy to say and hard to do. So how do we incorporate that in the things that are important to us? And of course, running.
Yeah. So I'm going to talk about brown rice versus peanut M&Ms for a little bit, if that's okay.
Of course.
All right. So you're sitting down and you've got some brown rice in front of you or a bowl of peanut M&Ms. And for the sake of the conversation, let's pretend they're frozen peanut M&Ms. Nothing is better than frozen peanut M&Ms. What are you going to eat? You're going to eat the frozen peanut M&Ms every single time. And guess what? It tastes a lot better than the brown rice. And if you eat those frozen peanut M&Ms for 10 minutes, you'll probably feel great. But if you eat those frozen M&Ms for an hour or a day or a week or a month or a year, you'll start to feel gross. You'll feel like shit. Whereas the brown rice doesn't taste as good right away. But if you eat brown rice for a day, a week, a month, a year, you'll feel great.
Right.
The same thing is true with how we spend our attention. So we live in a world of peanut M&Ms. Social media, cable news, even music, like songs, we go from one to the next. There's these constant things that are encroaching on our attention. They're bright and shiny objects. And most of them, they feel real good in the moment. It almost always feels better to tweet or to post on Instagram than to like have a difficult conversation with your partner or to work on a book that you're writing. At work, it feels so much better to clear out your inbox than to actually like work on that strategic plan that requires deep thinking in the moment. But if you spend your whole life doing those peanut M&M tasks, you start to feel like crap. You start to feel really exhausted and burnt out. Whereas if you can just get through those first 10 minutes of eating brown rice, then suddenly brown rice becomes a lifestyle, right? Healthy eating becomes a lifestyle. So healthy attention management is no different. Now, the key practice there is I do not believe that you can rely on willpower. I simply think there are too many distractions and they're too powerful. So what advice would you give to someone that's struggling to eat, to stop eating peanut M&Ms all the time? You tell them, like, don't have peanut M&Ms in your house. So right. I think the same thing is true with these bright and shiny objects that detract from our attention. So I know we were talking about this before we hit record. I'm a total social media junkie. So I had to take that stuff all off my phone because otherwise I'd just be on it. I'd be on it when I'm in line. I'd be on it when I'm playing with my kid. Didn't like the person I was when I was always on that. So for me, getting rid of the peanut M&Ms meant taking it off my phone. When I'm working on a book project, I disable the internet in my email client so that I have to work on the book project. And it's amazing how much more effective that kind of getting upstream is versus in the moment trying to resist whatever the distraction is. And then I think in running, this really comes down to, and it very much relates to the next principle, which is around patience, taking the long view. Because if you're in it for the peanut M&Ms, you could race every weekend. You could skip the, you know, strength and conditioning or the stability work or whatever it is that's helping you stay injury free. You could bag the medium intensity runs and just do the workouts. And in the moment, those decisions feel great, but you'll likely end up injured if that's what you do. So it's around really trying to delineate in your actual life and in your running life, what are the peanut M&Ms versus what is the brown rice? And then try to craft your training plan, your day, your environment in a way that promotes the brown rice.
Yeah. There's so much to talk about there. You know, obviously, the first things that come to mind is a life of brown rice sounds pretty boring. So maybe you need a couple of peanut M&Ms. But the other part of me is thinking about, you know, when you are present, especially when you're running, it is extremely hard to stay present the whole time. You know, like you're, let's say you're running and you're doing the whole body scan where you, you know, go from your head to all the way up to your toes and you're trying to figure out, you know, to stand up straight and stride out long and all of the form cues and stuff. You can only handle that for a little while. You can't do that for hours on end. So staying present, while in theory sounds awesome, I find that it's very, very difficult to maintain for a long period of time. So how do you respond to that?
Yeah. So the first thing around the brown rice versus M&Ms, I think it's totally fine to have some M&Ms in your life, but I would push back because I think that if you identify like social media, CNN.com, doom scrolling, and you cut all that stuff out, it might be hard at first, but my guess is that you'll actually feel better. Right? Because if brown rice is like spending intimate time with people that you care about distraction-free, doing creative work that you care about, running with your friends in your community, that stuff, like you can feel pretty good having minimal M&Ms. And then to your question about running, yeah, I would never try to be present all the time during runs. I listen to music, podcasts sometimes when I work out. I don't really think that there's anything wrong with that. I think that listen, it depends on what your goals are. If you are running to have a good time and that helps you have a good time, great. If you are running to really work on something or to really get in touch with your level of exertion before a race, then sure, you'll probably want to have some workouts where the focus is just looking inwards. And the last thing I'll say is there's actually a lot of research that shows that certain situations call for what's called internal focus. So just that, like really paying attention to breathing, fatigue, like in running speak, like actually trying to feel where your lactic threshold is so you get right underneath it. And then there's external focus, which is listening to upbeat music. And they are both handy and they're both used at different times effectively.
Good. That is so good to hear, because sometimes you need to like dial it in and sometimes you need to distract yourself from how horrible it is, because running's horrible sometimes. And that's what we need to accept, right?
Yeah, 100%. And the best way to do that is to run with other people and to run in a community. I know it's been a little weird and hard with COVID, but as things get better and the science continues to show that for most people, most outdoor activities are safe if you're vaccinated, I think that then you kind of get two morsels of brown rice at the same time. You're running and you're connecting with people that you love.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, we could skip ahead to community. That is one of the six pillars. So build deep community. So you think we should all join a running club or a book club?
Basically.
Yeah.
You know, no one remembers on their deathbed the gold medal that they won or the promotion that they got or the bestseller list that they made or the fact that their podcast was in the top 100. What they remember about those pursuits tend to be the people that they did it with. And in today's world, we are so focused on like optimization and efficiency and hacks. And the first thing that gets crowded out is community, because community building is inefficient and it takes time. It is always easier to just bang out your workout right from your front door, not coordinate meeting at the trailhead, not waiting for Rachel, who's always 5 minutes late, not having to adjust your pace down or up because that's what the other gals are running at or that's what the other guys are running at. It's much more efficient to just go at it alone. And in certain circumstances, that makes sense, because why not be efficient sometimes? The problem is when everything in life becomes in the name of efficiency or optimization, then we start to neglect community. And ultimately that catches up to us. It leaves us feeling lonely. It can leave us feeling sad, burnt out, depressed, anxious. And the flip side of that is if you actually prioritize community, it's a lot more fun. So as an athlete, I used to be like that, right? I'm type A. Between rigid and flexible, I'm definitely more on the rigid end of the spectrum. I think I'm working on that, but let's say 5 years ago, me for sure. And, I was like, oh, well, I can't train with so-and-so because like they're 3% better or 3% worse. Like I won't be right on my prescribed stuff. And over the long haul, that's bullshit. Like if the delta isn't huge, the benefit you'll get out of being with other people, whether they're a little bit better or a little bit worse than you, completely outweighs the 8 to 10 second per mile difference. Now, if you're training for the Olympics, okay, maybe, but you can at least warm up with people.
Right.
So in practice, what does this look like? It doesn't mean that suddenly every run needs to be a group run, but it means that if you're doing 6 runs a week solo, maybe try to do 5 runs a week solo and 1 in a group. If you do a long run on the weekend and 1 workout during the week, maybe try to work out Tuesday and Thursday with a group. So again, within reason, but it's the first thing that does go when we get so focused on being efficient or like when we feel busy all the time.
Recovering from long races like the half and the marathon is often a neglected part of the training process for most runners. Unfortunately, if you don't properly recover from your race, you'll increase your injury risk, increase the total recovery time, and limit your long-term potential, making it harder to break your PR and stay healthy. In addition to taking it easy, optimizing your nutrition is one of the most effective ways to speed up recovery. For you to recover faster, you must provide the body with the nutrients it needs to accelerate muscle repair. And that's what Amino Company's product, Heal, does better than almost anything on the market. Heal is designed to reduce recovery times and improve physical function after training and races by accelerating muscle repair while helping maintain a healthy inflammatory response. In fact, a recent clinical trial compared the use of Heal with high-quality whey protein. Heal showed a 3 times larger response to whole body protein synthesis and breakdown, which led to reduced muscle protein breakdown and an increased muscle protein synthesis compared to whey. In layman's terms, this means participants had less muscle breakdown and faster muscle repair when using Heal. If you're looking for a nutritional advantage when it comes to recovering from your running injury or your daily training, I recommend you give Heal a try. We've even got a special offer for you where you can save 30% and get a free gift by using the code RC30. Just head to aminoco.com/RTTT. That's aminoco.com/RTTT. And use the code R30 at checkout to save 30% and get your free gift. Yeah. Yeah. And science backs it up with the power of a group. You know, your perception of effort is lower when you run with other people. You feel better. It's just your runs are better. So if you're looking for that, then yeah, run in a group. Although I did like the point that you made earlier about figure out what your priorities and your goals are, because you know what? Some people love to race every weekend. You know, races are coming back. And, you know, when I try to coach those people, I find it to be a challenge because they're always recovering from a race and then training for another one the next weekend. But you know what? That's what they love to do. That is their social life. That is how they have fun. You know, a 5K every Saturday is like, that's their jam. And, yeah. You know, yeah. And who am I to say you shouldn't do that? You know?
I'm 100%. I'm glad that you're calling me out on this. I don't want to be like a performance elitist. So I put my mindset in someone that is optimizing on performance.
Right.
And there, racing every weekend is a terrible idea. But if running 5Ks keeps you active and in the community, like, sign me up to run every weekend. That's great. So yes, I think it should all ladder down from what's the actual goal here. The power of the group. One of the stories that's in the book is my dear friend and just awesome human being, Shalane Flanagan, who runners will know. She had this whole thing called the Shalane Effect. The New York Times like did this huge profile on her. And when she started doing more of her workouts in a group, everyone got better. And it's not because Shalane has some magical power. It's probably not even the Shalane effect. When I talked to her about it, she's like, no, it's actually like the Shalane interacting with the group effect. But it was all these women that came up around the same time in the sport that could support each other that ultimately led to each of them individually getting better. And now Shalane's a coach. So it continues.
Yes. Yes. And she's running all the majors right now, as we know.
Don't tell her not to race every weekend. Believe you me, I've had this conversation with Shalane like 6 times, but she's determined and her goal is no longer a performance. So there's only so much one can do to hold someone like that back.
Yeah. Well, it's a once in a lifetime experience with all the races in the fall. So we gotta give her a pass, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So where are we? We're going back to being patient. So what does being patient have to do? So like, I mean, I could probably answer this too. I see it all the time. People are trying to rush, rush, rush. I want to get X time. I want to run a marathon and I can only run 2 miles right now. And I want to run a marathon next weekend or, you know, like rush, rush, rush. We want to get better now. So yeah. how do we find some balance there?
Yeah. Well, there's this supplement that I sell called Get Better Now.
Perfect. I'll take it.
I wish it was that easy, right? It would sell a lot better than my book does. So, you know, one of the misconceptions that I take on in the book is this notion that there's no such thing as an overnight breakthrough. We are often told the stories of the breakthrough, because that's what's sexy, that's what gets the media's attention, that's what we want to hear about. But what we don't see is that underneath those so-called overnight breakthroughs, there are often decades of work, or at the very least, years of work. So if you pound a stone 30 times and it breaks on the 31st time, the New York Times is going to show up and say, stone breaks on pound. But it didn't break on the 31st pound, it broke as a result of the 30 where you didn't see much happen.
Right.
And making progress in just about any meaningful endeavor is the same. Now, it's tricky because this isn't to say that you should never adjust or change course if things aren't working. I think the argument I make in the book is that we tend to adjust or change course too quickly. And again, because even though I'm not currently running, my physical practice is in strength, but once a runner, always a runner. I spent a lot of time running. My partner, Caitlin, is a diehard runner. And I love the running community. So a lot of stories in the book are from runners. So in the patients chapter, I talk about Eliud Kipchoge. Yeah. So if Shalane is the female American goat, then Eliud is the world's male goat. And he holds every single big world record. He did the whole breaking two exhibition and somehow actually broke two. And what's really interesting about Kipchoge is in a sport where people switch coaches all the time, Kipchoge's stuck with his same coach throughout his whole career. And when they interview his coach about how he makes progress, Patrick Sang, his coach, says, Eliud runs slowly by slowly. So that's their whole mantra for making progress, slowly by slowly. And even in his workouts, Kipchoge talks about how he rarely, if ever, exceeds 80 to 90% effort in a workout. So talk about restraint and patience. That is like the definition of just being consistent, small steps leading to big gains. Now, Kipchoge has got a ton of discipline. For recreational runners, I think this is a real easy trap to fall into because you go on Instagram where everything is filtered anyways. And do people post their restraint, like dialing back the pace or stopping 1-800 short? No, they post like the ball buster workout. And that makes us all think that every workout needs to be like that, or we need to do those workouts more frequently. So again, the culture is all about breakthroughs and heroic efforts, but actual sustainable progress happens more like Kipchoge, which is slowly by slowly.
Right, right. Like we use the baseball analogy. You don't have to hit a home run every time you're up at bat, but just try to get on base. Yep. But then you get pushback from people and they're like, well, I want to go to the well, because if I don't go to the well, I'm not going to be able to do that on race day. Like they want to push themselves super hard in training because that's what's going to happen on race day.
Yeah. It's the hardest thing to do as a coach, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You pull people back.
Yeah. It's insecurity.
Yes.
In the runner. I mean, you see this all the time with newer runners during the taper. Like they really start to get insecure. They haven't run fast in a few weeks. So just to make sure it's there, they run really hard in a workout during the taper. And they have a great workout. And then they don't race as well as they thought they would. And you wonder why. And it's like, well, you left that race in the workout. And this is the value of having a coach, is someone that has pattern recognition, that has been with you, that sees your improvement. You have to trust that person. It's like the self-distancing. Better than asking a friend is actually to have a friend or a coach say, just show restraint, save it for race day. Yeah. Something I like to say is like, don't leave the race in a workout.
Absolutely.
Because generally speaking, and this is the better you are, the more true this is, because going to the well takes a toll on your body. You've got maybe 2-3 times a year when you can really go to the well. My good friend and collaborator, Steve Magnus, who coached for a long time at University of Houston and Nike before that, he talks about like, quote unquote, seeing God workouts. And his rule is that you should have one seeing God workout a year and it should be with other people.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah,
I like it. That's great. Yeah. I wanted to add one more metaphor for you. You know, you'd said the stone breaking on the 30th try. I say something similar with ice melts at 32 degrees. And if you have an ice cube that's 20 degrees, you see no progress for 12 degrees, even though you're heating it, you get no results until that magic moment where it hits 32 degrees and everything melts. And so like when people are frustrated and like, oh, I'm doing all the right things, why am I not seeing results? And say, like, well, they're coming.
Yeah,
you have to be patient.
And for sure, in runners especially, when you start running, the results do happen right away. So that ice just melts. You go from not being able to run walking, from run walking to jogging, from jogging to running, from 11 minute mile to 10, 10 down to 9, 9 down to 8. And then suddenly you go from 8 to 7:56 and it's hard.
Right.
And then getting down to 7 takes a year. And that's when patience becomes so important, when that low hanging fruit is already chopped off the tree. And you just have to show restraint. And that's why it's so important to be grounded and to actually like what you're doing. Because if you can't enjoy the process, of course you're going to burn out.
Yes.
Because it takes time.
Yes. Yes. That's great. So, okay. So vulnerability. Embrace vulnerability to develop genuine strength and confidence. So everybody's wanting to build confidence. How can I be more confident as a runner? How can I, you know, be calm at the starting line and be confident that I can do my best? And you say it might have something to do with being vulnerable.
Yes. It sounds very counterintuitive, but the best way to have real true strength and confidence is to go to your weakest points and confront them and explore them. So there's this story from Greek mythology I tell in the book, and it's about this ancient god named Pan. And I promise I'll get this back to running. So Pan lives just beyond the village boundary. And when villagers would get lost leaving the village, and sometimes they'd stumble into Pan's domain and they see him, and he paralyzed them with fear. They became so scared that they saw him, they tried to run away and they got frozen. They tripped over sticks and they literally died of fear. Other villagers, a rare few, they heard about Pan and they deliberately, intentionally left the village to go see Pan. And when those villagers went to Pan, he bestowed upon them strength, kindness, and wisdom. And I don't actually think there's a god named Pan. I think this is an allegory that shows that if we can go to the things that we don't want to, the things that scare us, sometimes alone, but sometimes with the help of a friend, a coach, a therapist, then ultimately we get much stronger. And the reason is because we are not lying to ourselves. If deep down inside you're craving a certain race result because you're feeling really insecure about yourself, or you have body image issues, or you feel like you won't be enough unless you run this time, or you can't identify as a runner unless you run this distance, those things are fine. Like, go explore them. Those things themselves aren't going to hurt you. But if you try to repress those things or deny them or push them away, it only works for so long, and eventually they creep up and then they totally throw you off guard. So that's at a pretty deep level. Even at a more superficial level, being vulnerable simply means, hey, like, I know I can't run this pace, so I'm not going to try to. Whereas if you lie to yourself because you really want to run a 6-minute pace, but you kind of know you can't, but you're lying to yourself, and then somehow you get into a 6-minute pace, you explode. So I think this works on two levels. One is, go see your insecurities. Doesn't mean fix them. Doesn't mean you have to like them, but at least be honest with yourself about what's going on. And again, sometimes this requires the help of professionals, friends, community, what have you. And then at the second level, don't be an idiot. Like, don't try to be bulletproof. Don't try to be something you're not. It can work as a story in your head, but it will not work in the real world when the rubber meets the road.
Yeah. Oh, there's so much there. So much there. I mean, I am a big fan of big goals and big dreams, things that you don't think that you can ever achieve. But those are things that you say out loud, and then you put them on your shelf, and then you build slowly to, you know, the process goals, you know, the things that you have to do every single day. But, you know, I, from personal experience, I know exactly what you're talking about. You know, I had a big quest of, you know, breaking 3 hours in the marathon, and I ended up doing it. But by the end, I hated marathons and I burned out. Yeah.
So you did, I burned out. Congrats. I had the same quest. I ran 3:01:15 on a course that measured long, and I only ran one more marathon after that. So yeah. I'm sure that's part of why I burned out too.
Well, my second to last race was 3:29. So, you know, I had to go and race again to get the sub-3. So I got it, but it really was like one of the, it wasn't at the beginning, but it became just one of those external goals. It became one of those boxes that I wanted to check. And now I run for very different reasons now, but I'm super proud of that. Don't get me wrong. I'm super, super proud of that accomplishment, but I'm not going to do it again anytime soon.
So a couple of questions. Yeah. What did you run?
258.
Yeah. You left nothing up to chance. Very good.
Oh no.
And then my second question is, how long where you changed? Like going from 301 to 258, how long did that allow you to be content or like to feel really good about yourself?
Ooh, that's a fantastic question. Cause I still have glimmers of like big pride of that. But you know, I felt amazing for sure for a while after that. It was something that I've really, really wanted, but I don't think it actually changed, you know, my view of myself. Cause I felt like I always knew that I could do that. So it was something that felt great. But I don't think I got depressed or anything like that afterward. Like some people reach these goals and then they're like, now what? Now what?
Yeah,
I didn't really have that. I mean, I ran one more half after that, but then now I do it more for just body and mind and mental space now. But yeah, I can understand how a lot of people, once they hit their big, you know, dream goal, they're like, well, searching for the next one or not satisfied.
Yeah. And do you think you'd feel the same way if you went like 3:15, like 3 hours flat, 15 seconds, or would you still be chasing it?
That is a fabulous question. I would probably go get it. I would still be racing for it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the question becomes, well, what happens if you never get it? And ultimately, like these are the things to toy around with because, you know, I don't want to burst your bubble, but there's no difference between a 2:58:30. I mean, there's a 2 minute difference. Yeah. But no difference in who you are, your training. And we all strive for those days where we put it together. So where we have that great race or like where we meet that perfect person or where the book hits the bestseller list or whatever it is. And those things are phenomenal. And if we're lucky, we'll have a few of those over the course of our life. But often, like if you set really big goals, you don't achieve them. That's just the cost of setting really big goals. And that's okay too. So I think the reason I'm prodding a little bit is because what we should try as best as we can, easier to say than to do, what we should try to celebrate is the process of attacking those goals versus achieving them themselves. Because that way we're kind of insulated at least a little bit from the failures and from the successes. That way.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, that when I got super close and didn't make it, I was devastated. And then, you know, that next training cycle, I really had to sort of protect my heart, you know, because I knew if I had tried again and missed it, it would just, I didn't want to be as sad again. So I was trying to be really conservative and do, you know, all the right things. But you're right. I could have very easily not achieved it. But is the experience any different? Hard to say.
Yeah, it's something I talk about in the book is that it's not that results don't matter, they do. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with striving for a big goal. If anything, I think it's great. That's like, you know, peak of the mountain is what gets you up off the side and heading towards it. But those results, they make up like 99%, the process of going for those results makes up like 99.9999% of your life. The moment you cross the finish line and you let it soak in that you ran 2:58 and change is like 1 minute out of a gazillion minutes. And again, it's not to say that we shouldn't have those minutes, but I think that we, especially as type A athletes, we tend to over-index on that and under-index on the process.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And as I said, now I run more to clear my mind. I'm an afternoon runner. I run after work because that is my time to decompress from the day. I do not try to run fast. And I think that this segues into your last point is you got to move your body to ground your mind. So you want to go into that?
Sure. So I don't think that this audience will need much convincing. But just in case, so physical activity and movement is so much more than just about your body. Yes, there are all kinds of incredible effects on your physiology and biology. So longevity, health, strength, yet, or equally important is the effects that movement has on your mind. So we know based on just decades of research now that in terms of depression and anxiety, while exercise does not replace therapy or medication, it is a tool that is equally as powerful for many people as therapy or medication. We know that subclinical feelings of restlessness, sadness, being in a rut, all of those kinds of things respond incredibly well to exercise. We know that exercise is the only thing that's been identified that has a strong causal linkage to preventing dementia. So there is no nutrition thing. There's theories, but nothing has been proven other than exercise to reduce Alzheimer's risk and cognitive decline. We know that exercise helps with emotional control, with creativity. So when we step back, I argue in the book that it's just crazy that we think that the only people whose job it is to move their bodies are elite athletes. So I'm a writer and an executive coach, and I consider my physical practice an integral part of my job. Mm-hmm. So I think that the physicians I coach, the entrepreneurs I coach, like, they all say, when am I going to exercise? I got all this work to do. It's like, no, exercise is a part of your work. Getting back to groundedness, it's the foundation of that mountain. So I think that we really need to continue to prioritize physical practice and movement in our life. It does not need to be heroic. The benefits start at just 20 minutes a day. I often talk to people that aren't diehard athletes, and they think that they have to run marathons or do CrossFit, but actually you can just take a brisk walk, mm-hmm. and that gets you most, if not all, of the way there. We just were not meant to inhabit these bodies without using them.
Yeah, for sure. 100% agree. And I was delighted to see you reference Andrea Barber in the book. She was a guest on the Run to the Top last year.
Oh, nice.
For people. Yeah. So if people who didn't listen to that one, please go listen to that. She was Kimmy on Full House, the silly neighbor actress. And she has an incredible story about how running essentially, she says, saved her life from all sorts of things. So that was that. That's a super powerful story that, you know, exercise can definitely help, but on the flip side, it can't do absolutely everything. You know, runners still have mental health issues too.
Yep.
It's not, you know, a magic bullet, but it definitely helps.
Yeah. It's, the way I talk about it in the book is it's a tool in the toolkit. Mm-hmm. For mental health. And I think the other tools that are evidence-based are therapy and medication.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So Brad, what is next? What questions are left unanswered? What are you thinking about, as far as moving forward and things that you want to explore for some, your next work?
Yeah, so I'm really trying to practice what I preach.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me because I'm a pusher. I look ahead too. I'm just trying to enjoy this one and to do what I can to get this book out there into the world because I really believe in it. I think that it's the best work that I've done. It was hard. Mm-hmm. I went down to my vulnerable places for it. I really poured my all into it. So in the spirit of this book being called The Practice of Groundedness, I myself am trying to practice showing restraint, not immediately jumping ahead to the next book proposal, reading fiction, taking time to have conversations like this about something that's already done versus pushing immediately for the next thing. Ask me again in 3 months, I might have an answer, but for now, here I am.
That is like the best answer. And, I love the practice part. We didn't really touch on that part in this conversation, but like we should look at our running that way. You know, people talk about practicing yoga all the time. That's just, I'm going to practice yoga. You don't get better or worse. Or if you have a bad day, doing downward dog, you don't beat yourself up. Right. But people have bad days running and they're, I didn't hit my splits for my 400 meters or whatever. But if you change your viewpoint and your perspective to running as a practice, it changes everything.
Yeah. So I'm glad that you're mentioning it. I think it's probably like maybe my favorite part of the book. So it's a good plug for if you like the conversation and you want more, go get the book and you'll dig the practice part. But people hear practice and they think about like working at something to improve. I need to practice basketball. I need to practice dancing. That is the most superficial definition of practice. Practice is about having an endeavor in your life that you care deeply about, that you find meaningful, and that you pay very close attention to and make adjustments in over time. So in the book, I talk about how we've seen rates of burnout go way up in doctors at the same time that physicians start identifying their work as a job versus a practice.
Ah.
And I think the same thing is probably true in runners, where if running is purely performance-based, it's not a practice, it's something I only do to achieve goals, then your sustainability is going to suffer because, again, we all have highs and lows. Whereas when we shift to having something as a practice, it is a part of our identity, it's a part of our lives, and everything is grist for the mill. So epic failures are fine because it's a lifelong practice. Failures are just information that we'll learn from. Successes, they feel great, but they don't change anything because they too are just happy waves along the way. So I think that, you know, for all of these principles in the book, they are all practices. And if you can shoot just 60% in a given day, that's winning. You know, my publisher, they wanted to call the book Get Grounded. And they said, like, it's more commercially viable that way. And I'm like, that's the whole point of the book is, like, you can't just get grounded. Like, you can't just get anything. You have to practice. You have to be consistent, patient, present, and all those other things.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, I think that is where we should probably wrap it up. And we're going to have some links in our show notes to your book and to get some, I think it's 40% off and some freebies from you, which would be really cool. So check out the show notes for that. But Brad, before I let you go, I have a couple questions I ask everyone.
Yeah, so, these are my favorite. Go.
So if you could go back and talk to yourself when you first started running, what advice would you give yourself?
Just have fun.
That's a good one. That's a good one. What's the greatest gift that running has given you?
Friends, community.
Mm-hmm. And finally, where can listeners connect with you?
So as I mentioned, I am fairly a Luddite. I have one social media, and that is Twitter. And my handle there is @bstahlberg, just like my name. And then if you want to reach out with specific questions, my website has a contact form. My website is www.bradstahlberg.com. And all my writing lives there too.
Well, perfect. Brad, it was an absolute delight to meet you. We live in the same town, so I hope to meet you actually in person instead of virtual. We can go for a run or maybe join a book. I can join your book club. You can join my book club, you know. But I'm so happy that we connected and had this wonderful conversation today.
Yeah, me too, Claire. Thanks a lot.
This was one of those conversations that could have gone on for twice as long. Brad and I did chat a bit after the show as well, and I almost felt like I was getting a mini coaching session from him. I certainly didn't intend to get all vulnerable with him, but hey, I guess I'm just putting one of his principles into practice, right? As I mentioned at the top of the show, Brad's new book, The Practice of Groundedness, has been marked down on Amazon by over 40% for a limited time. If you're thinking about getting a copy, you probably want to jump on that soon. For listeners of the Run to the Top podcast, Brad is offering special bonuses, including training plans and guides to resilience and sustainable performance. We'll have all those links in the show notes, or you can access them right now at runnersconnect.net/484. Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast with me, Claire Bartholik, the Planted Runner. Our mission is to help you become a better runner with every episode. Connect with me on Instagram at The Planted Runner and at Runners Connect. Join the Runners Connect team at runnersconnect.net and support our show for free with a review on Apple Podcasts. If you love the show and want to get more free content in your inbox, become one of my favorite listeners and get the elite treatment at runnersconnect.net/podcast. Have a great run today.